Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you to our program. You can also watch today's program being streamed by going to Ustream, the channel, and searching for Gary Null. You can also listen anywhere in North America and Canada on any portable listening device. Write this number down because you never know when you might need this if you can't find the program anywhere else. This number is 712-775-6850. That's 712-775-6850. We're going to talk about vitamin D and how we're not getting enough and we're getting too low amounts when we do get it. So this is a brand new report about the newest information on vitamin D. It's really important. And then most healthy women would benefit from eating a light meal during labor, from Memorial University in Newfoundland. And historically, women are told, don't eat anything. Well, now they're saying, no, you should eat something. Also, from Northwestern University, magnesium during labor may reduce risks of fever in the mothers and complications in the babies. That's new information. Also, krill, that's K-R-I-L-L, which is a form of fish, it's an oil that can support the immune health of athletes, from University of Glasgow out of Scotland. And moringa is M-O-R-I-N-G-A, oleifera, the leaves contain some really important nutrients that are richer in iron than spinach, more calcium than milk, and all 8 essential amino acids. So how can we use it? Why haven't we heard about it? That and more on health and healing. Also today, my guest in the second part of our program will be Gerald Salante. And quite simply, Gerald is one of those oracles who lets us know what's likely to happen, and in an amazing percentage of the time, he has been spot on. And he doesn't deal in generalities. It's very specific. So today I want to know, what is the likely financial outcome of our society? I believe that for about 45 million Americans, everything is just fine and will continue to be fine. The quality of their lives, their standard of living, will only improve. That's the irony, because the worse things become in other parts of America, the more those people who have money or resources in those areas want to be in places that are more secure. Hence what I call the green zones, places like Manhattan, for example. But what about for all the other people? So we're going to take a look at America's financial stability. Corporate, personal, we're going to look at all of it. Government, and he will give us his insights. Also today, I'm going to air you a clip from a person who has who's a partner of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and faces Big Pharma and others in court all the time. He has a very impassioned talk about why the current FDA proposed commissioner is the wrong choice. Now, I don't know when there was a good FDA commissioner who was not affiliated some way, either ideologically or financially, with big corporations, especially Big Pharma. That's always where they go to work afterwards. And we have some really disturbing evidence of former FDA commissioners who actually broke the law and were trading on information that they could control the outcome of. So we'll talk about that as well. But we do not want Obama's proposed commissioner of the FDA. It would be really bad for all of us who believe in freedom of choice and for those of us who want to have the freedom to eat organic and to dictate our own future. So we'll play that. And oh, I have some other clips as well we're going to use today. Plus, we're going to look at the future of indoor agriculture It's called vertical farming, and it's really going to be terrific. I'm very excited by it. And did you know that the IRS has been spying on your cell calls and your phone calls? Why? Who gave them the permission to spy on all of our phone calls? The IRS. So just remember, anything you say will be used against you. And also, there's another hospital that's been bombed, a Doctors Without Borders hospital. And again, this time it's Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is simply out of control. In fact, you may not be aware of this, but one of the sons of the just-deceased House of Saud, he lives in Beverly Hills and was arrested for allegedly sexually assaulting all the women. And then he was released, and the DA decided not to press charges. Anyone else do that, they'd be in jail right now. But then it gets worse. Then they end up stopping him on a flight and find one of the largest or the largest confiscation of illegal prescription drugs and cocaine on a flight that was going into the capital of Saudi Arabia. Why is it that the Saudis, the princes, can get away with anything they want? It's because of our relationship and how much they spend on arms. They're our largest trading partner in arms. They buy what we make to kill people. And now they're killing a lot of people. So we'll discuss that. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Vitamin D is deficient in most people, and yet it is one of the most important nutrients you could take into your body. It helps your brain. It protects your heart. It helps your liver. It really strengthens your immune system. This is some of the latest on vitamin D. I'll quote this. The largest trauma center in the state of Georgia, Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta, did a study finding that most patients were deficient in vitamin D, and the more deficient they were, the more difficulty and expense they had through surgery and recovery. So they decided to give every patient upon admission 50,000 units of vitamin D3, and then continue to treat these patients daily with high doses as needed. This reversed the problems of vitamin D deficiency, and this is one of the most dramatic examples of the utility of vitamin D3. For example, this large level 1 trauma center has reduced the death rate by 42% through the use of high-dose vitamin D3. It has also reduced infections, inflammation, the need for ventilators, and the need for pain medication. As a consequence, the cost of care has been significantly reduced. No adverse effects of these high-dose vitamin D have been seen. And so that's good. And then you have Emory University. They did a separate study, a randomized controlled trial, that looked at the effect of high doses of vitamin D3 on the length of hospital stay. And they found that based upon patients who had severe sepsis or septic shock, there was a substantial reduction in those who took 100,000 units of vitamin D3 for 5 days, and up to 250,000 a day, and 500,000, a half a million units a day, against a placebo. And the results were remarkable. Quote, the findings were so dramatic, the practice improvements of comparable potential magnitude with negligible cost and exemplary safety and efficacy are rare, and raised deliberation of the ethical implications of choosing not to test for and not to treat low vitamin D status in advance of surgery, end quote. And then there was another randomized controlled trial, and it showed that it also reduced infections. So all-cause mortality, that means death from any cause, in vitamin D, and this is another study that showed that you reduce your risk of dying. So concluding comments, quote, all the major concerns about vitamin D and the objections of doctors to using high doses have been resolved in recent studies. High doses are safe and effective, while the cost of using such high doses is close to zero. For example, a bottle of 100 capsules of 50,000 units of vitamin D3 can be purchased on Amazon for $17. There have been a number of studies that show that vitamin D3 is superior to vitamin D2. There is now evidence that vitamin D3 provides major critical benefits with no significant risk. Hospitals should immediately start considering the use of high-dose vitamin D3 in their trauma centers, while first responders should be giving 50,000 units or more to the injured. So, that's the latest. And again, this is prior to that being published in the mainstream media, which probably won't touch in any case. So a natural, non-toxic way of getting people healthy, especially those with infections, heart conditions, but also vitamin D3 is good for depression and helping protect your brain. Memorial University in Newfoundland, Canada, quote, most healthy women can skip the fasting and in fact would benefit from eating a light meal during labor. So suggests the latest article published in the peer-reviewed journal Anesthesiology. Well, why is that important? Because women traditionally have been told to avoid eating or drinking during labor due to concerns they may aspirate or inhale liquid or food into their lungs, which can cause pneumonia. But advances in anesthesia care means most healthy women are highly unlikely to have the problem today, and when researchers reviewed the literature of hundreds of studies on the topic, they determined that withholding food and liquids may be unnecessary for women in labor. Quote, our findings suggest a change in practice makes sense. I would agree with that. And magnesium during labor can reduce the risk of fever in the mothers, and this is from Northwestern University Memorial Hospital. And it says, quote, women who received magnesium sulfate during labor were less likely to develop maternal fever, a condition that can lead to a variety of complications in newborns, including difficulty breathing, seizures, cerebral palsy, and conditions known as floppy baby syndrome, characterized by inadequate muscle tone. So, they looked at 6,000 laboring mothers, and they found that giving them magnesium made a difference. I wouldn't suggest magnesium sulfate. I would suggest magnesium citrate. Also, from the University of Sydney in Australia, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, supplementation with vitamin B3 reduces non-melanoma skin cancer reoccurrence. And that's important. They looked at a lot of people in a big study, and they found that those who took the vitamin B3 had a substantial reduction. And it was 500 milligrams of nicotinamide and against, or use a non-flush niacin against placebo. So, if you live where there's sun, Florida, Arizona, California, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, you're going to be exposed to a lot more sun than the average person. And you tan up and you feel fine and you don't see a problem. What you don't realize is that you're not seeing what's underneath the skin. And most cancers are actually precancerous and you can't see them. Now, by the time you see the brown little spot where you see discoloration in your mole, it's already advanced. That's why you should take the niacin, the non-flush niacin. It can help protect that. And from the University of Glasgow in Scotland, krill oil supports immune health in athletes. It strengthens the immune system. And for anyone who's doing a lot of exercising, this is published in PLOS One. And why? Quote, natural killer cells are the first line of defense, reacting quickly to threats such as bacteria and viruses to keep them under control until the antigen-specific immune system responds. That's what they're saying here. And that's what this does. So in lay language, here's what it means. If you're an athlete, not just an occasional person who exercises occasionally, but really you go out every day and you put in your hour or more, your immune system is going to suffer because the body wasn't meant for competitive athletics, certainly not long-distance training. In fact, I used to do some studies using myself and friends as guinea pigs by saying, if we did long-distance running, how far did we have to run? How frequently did we have to run before we began to see our immune system taking a hit? And virtually 100% of us, over 150 people who were training 1 year for the New York City Marathon, we took blood chemistries of all of our immune responses, we all had under 200 T cells the week before the marathon. Now, had we gone into a clinic and said we're fatigued, and they would have taken a blood test, they would have said, you have AIDS-defining illnesses. Why? Because it's under 200 T cells. As stupid as that may sound, and it is, basing a diagnosis and hence very aggressive treatment with AZT on low T cells, that's what they were doing. And as a result, a lot of people were overtreated just like they do with breast cancer today. In any case, 2 weeks after the marathon, we had a very specific immune enhancement protocol. So they were not to do any exercises at all, outside of just walking, but they were to take a lot of vitamin C and quercetin and B-complex and antioxidants and zinc. All of their immune cells came back to normal, 1,500, 1,800, 2,000. But all of the natural killer cell came back as well. So our immune systems were strengthened. So that's where I wrote an article at the time about how all long-distance training is harmful. And now I've helped 30,000 people train to do the New York City Marathon, which was a wonderful experience. We did, I think, 23 New York City Marathons, plus the first marathons, which was always a joy. Sam Skinner and I both won gold medals in the Jamaica Marathons. the Los Angeles did the first Los Angeles Marathon. Won a gold in that also. San Francisco Marathon, the first. The Marine Corps Marathon. The London Marathon. The Waterfront Marathon won a gold there. And the Jersey Shore won a gold there. Also, the Montreal Marathon. So all around, wherever there was a marathon, we'd go and do it. A whole group of us. We'd see the sights. And did it almost like a party. You really train right so the marathon itself is just fun. But in every case, the entire training program was based upon what I call the laws of compensation, which means to the degree that you have any condition, genetic predisposition, trauma, bacterial, viral, injury, anything at all that's wrong with your body, you must overcompensate for that. And it's only when you overcompensate that then that no longer is the limitation. But if you don't overcompensate for it, it becomes compounded. It gets worse. And hence, the person that drinks or smokes or eats meat or fried food, they're always going to be aging faster than everyone else. Won't always notice it initially, but in time you will. Versus the person that may have eaten bad foods or drank or smoked initially at some point in their life, but now they're compensating. They're taking in only good foods. That's good, but that's not going to reverse the damage done by your smoking or drinking. You got to remember, whatever you damaged, whatever you lost for a year or 5 years or 10 years, whenever you're doing things that were counterproductive to your health, by not doing it, which you is a positive step, and by starting to do things healthy, that's a really good step, that's compensating. That means that whatever you would have gotten, cancer, heart disease, stroke, you're probably going to get it a little further out. You bought yourself some time. But, and this is the important part, by overcompensating, by really doing it right, you can actually undo the damage, reverse the genetic predisposition, and hence, as if you're starting fresh. How do I know that with any certainty? A, because I've counseled tens of thousands of individuals, probably more than any other person in American history, as a nutritionist. Secondly, I have seen what happens when you give people a good diet versus an outstanding program where it requires them to be very careful. Don't take a step back. You can't cheat. And I've seen the difference when people do both. And then I've seen people say, well, I can't make all these changes, so tell me two things I can do, that I can do. Or maybe it's not for them, maybe it's for someone else. And they know these people are not going to, you know, I'll give you just two examples. One is, well, no, I won't, because they're still alive. But there's a very famous athlete who's suffering from a neurological condition. And I was asked, would I help with him? And I said, sure, I'd be happy to. But then once I took the time to lay out a whole protocol, they were just saying, wait, this person isn't going to do that. No way they're going to do that. We thought it'd be simple, like take a pill. I said, sorry, I said, I don't work that way. Well, they're not going to do it. I said, okay, they're not going to do it. But 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, when that person is dying, just remember that it could have been different. And I see that all the time. Versus the people who do make all the changes. If I told you some of the famous people, people you would all know, and only a couple did it all. And those who did it all lived way long lives. We're talking about until the late 90s. In fact, one just died, I think, in the last 12 months. Louise Rainier, who won 2 Academy Awards and retired. And she was, I think, 103 or 104. And in vital health, because she did it all. And then I see people that won't change. They just won't give it up. They're bad stuff. They're not going to give it up. Okay. But understand that it's going to be there to meet you. You're going to tip. I don't care how smart you are or rich you are. It's going to happen. There is no human being that's ever lived in the history of the world, not a single soul, who is smarter than the karmic laws. Everybody will finally be rewarded. We just won't always like the rewards. Some will. So just remember that. So when I saw what people had to do in order to get back their immune system, and then you wonder why the entire AIDS community today is based upon profit, money, politics, and ideology, not upon healing anyone. But we did actually heal people with AIDS-finding illness completely and have all the documentation, medical records, and doctors to prove it. You wouldn't believe it. The potency some of those people are taking, their intravenous vitamins, drips, 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C 5 days a week, 6 days a week in some cases, for 16 months, reversed every condition they had. How many juices some were drinking, up to 16 glasses of juice a day, and some of them were really bitter juices like bitter melons, taking massive amounts of medicinal mushrooms. Now, the average person's not going to do that. They're only going to do until their comfort level says, I don't want to do this anymore. But then you have to ask, you may not want to do it. What's the consequence of not doing it? And then you deal with them one-on-one. You try to do as much as you can to inspire people, to try to get them to be more disciplined. And right now, as a nation, we are totally undisciplined. And the younger generation, there are a few exceptions, as a percentage, maybe 2-3%, but just undisciplined. And as a result, the younger generation today that are being born now will not live as long as their parents, because there's no discipline. They can do anything they want, anytime they want, and think that somehow it doesn't matter. Trust me, every thought you have in life has an outcome. Everything you do has an outcome. I once said, you will only know the truth of your choices when you reach your destinations. And then we take a look and think, wow, what if I'd have done it differently? Yeah? Well, in some cases, you still can. There's still time. I've seen people in their 90s make a change. Linus Pauling once said something to me. He said, and I think at the time he was 92. And he said, you know, Gary, I just wish I'd gotten into the health movement a whole lot younger, because I'm sure I could add another 15 years onto my life based upon what I know now. And he was right. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you throughout the world. Let me give you an idea of some of the really interesting guests that you're going to hear the remainder of this week. You're going to hear tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock a continuation of our Conversations with Remarkable Minds series, a full in-depth conversation on the Council on Foreign Relations and the elitist apparatus of global governance with Professor Lawrence Shope, a professor of modern history at the University of Illinois. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Professor Norman Pollack, Professor Emeritus of History at Michigan State, on the difference between Zionism versus Judaism. There's a huge difference, and most people are not aware of this. Then we have another remarkable mind. We have Dr. Vandana Shiva coming on to talk about big agriculture and the continuing onslaught of GMOs. So that's just this week. Also, tomorrow evening, if you have not seen the important film Poverty Inc., you have a chance. I'll be there. It's the final night of the ALBA Human Rights Documentary Film Festival. This is a very important film festival. And it'll be at 211 East 49th Street. That's between 3rd and 2nd Avenue. And the film starts at 8, and then afterwards there's an award ceremony and socializing. You have a chance to meet, if you go earlier, and I suggest that, see some of the other important documentaries, because normally, just so you understand, there'll be thousands of important documentaries made, and they're getting better and better. And I find it a privilege to be at, when I can get to a film festival, to be able to meet the people, take a day and just see as many documentaries as I can, and then to socialize with the people there. We generally have like a director's dinner. We all get together and we have dinner and we just share our stories about how long did it take you to do the documentary? How did you get your funding? Did you get any showings of it? Because most documentaries are never seen. 99.99% of all documentaries, no matter how good they are never shown. There's only a tiny handful that ever get a screening, and only those like a Michael Moores would certainly get a theatrical release, but everyone else is only a handful. You've got to have a lot of money behind that few handful to get the promotion. Most, once you, if you're lucky enough to get into a film festival, which the competition is horrific, that's the only time anyone's ever going to see the film. So then you have specialized films like Human Rights, and those are the powerful ones. So it's a meaningful cause, and I support it. So I'll be there, and it's at 211 East 49th Street, and I'll give you a phone number to call. It's 212-674-5398, 212-674-5398 for more information. Also, this Friday, I have room for four people left in what is called Harmonizing Life. That's all I'll say, except it will be the most important insights into the human condition of any lecture I've ever given. I will say no more than that. And it's one of those turning point kind of lectures. If you want to join it, because I'm doing it to film it and then make it into a full-fledged documentary with a lot of other minds in it, you can call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. It'll be this Friday from 7 to 9 o'clock on the Upper West Side. All right? And also, I can only take time in my schedule, which I do every day, to counsel very ill people, terminally ill people. I do not charge for it. I've never charged a penny to counsel anyone. But I can't be seeing everyone who's overweight, who's got, you know, high blood pressure, arthritis. But I've hired people to help you. That's all they do. So if you need counseling from really smart, good people, it costs you nothing. It's my gift to you. They're paid a nice salary, a living wage. You can call them to make a reservation to see them at 212-874-4000. In the evening, you'll see Larry, 212-874-4000. In the daytime, you'll see Celestina. And I'm also interviewing for more qualified nutritionists to join our team. And also I'm interviewing, I'm hiring a chef, I'm hiring some research editors, so got a lot going on. I want you to hear what happens when an individual decides to challenge how appointments are made to important federal positions. After all, the CDC head and the FDA head are two of the most important positions because it controls our healthcare system. And consistently, we get people who are aligned with big pharma in these positions. And never do we get a person that represents the people. We have never seen anyone for any of these jobs who represented a natural approach to disease, meaning do that which is least harmful first. We always get those who will approve every drug, don't want any bad drugs taken off the market, approve every vaccine. If they came out with 7,000 vaccines, I can promise you the heads of the CDC and the FDA and their boards, all of which are made up of people who have that kind of orthodox, stupid mind. I mean, it's really stupid. Speak with them. I debated the commissioner of the FDA. I debated the members that support them in Congress on television. They're as dumb as you can get. It's an embarrassment how stupid people in Washington are. But my God, they control everything. As if they're bright. As if they're wizards. As if they have this great hall of wise men and women we call Washington. Washington in reality is nothing more than a completely overflowing septic tank. That's all it is. I have no respect for anyone in Washington, D.C. Period. How's that for a gross generalization? I condemn Washington, D.C., the malfeasance, the self-interest, the people who sell themselves to the highest bidder, either while they're in office or knowing when they get out. And all the while, we're thinking, you're there because you're serving our interest. We can't be that naive any longer. Here's, listen up.
Anyhow, President Obama has tapped cardiologist Roger Califf to head the FDA. Bernie Sanders has expressed concern with this choice, as have you. Why?
Well, President Obama's pick to new commissioner of the FDA is possibly the worst selection imaginable. And I don't say that in the mind of hyperbole. His pick, Robert Califf, is the former professor of cardiology at Duke University. He led a research department there and was funded by Big Pharma almost exclusively. It was the go-to place and is the go-to place for Big Pharma. They deal with issues dealing with science. More importantly, they deal with issues on regulations. They deal with issues on how do we continue charging 2,000 or 4,000% increases or markups on our drugs. This is the kind of stuff they talk about there at Duke. On top of conducting medical research on Big Pharma's dime, Califf is also a paid consultant for drug companies. They include Eli Lilly, Merck, Novartis. It's a very cozy relationship with the pharmaceutical industry, considering that they funded this man's entire career, Tom. Mm-hmm. He's made all of his serious money from the industry. And I guess the worst thing about it is, aren't we a little tired of seeing this from President Obama? aren't we a little tired of remembering that this is the guy who was going to clean up the FDA? He was going to clean up Daniel Troy's disaster of the FDA. Daniel Troy, you'll remember, was appointed by Bush. He did more harm, put more dangerous drugs on the market, probably than anybody who'd been in charge of that department. So here comes Obama and says, we're going to clean that up the same we're going to clean up Wall Street. So here's the short list of Califf's accomplishments on behalf of Big Pharma. He's been an outspoken critic of regulations on the drug industry. He said that the FDA is too slow to approve new drugs. And I'm talking about not necessary drugs. I'm talking about optional drugs, where you might have 10 drugs on the market that do the same. This guy, Califf, says it doesn't make any difference whether it's a critically needed drug or whether it's just another drug that's a cash cow for the pharmaceutical industry. He thinks testing requirements are too strict for drug companies. This is the guy that Obama says, yeah, I want him in charge. The same way we saw, whether it's the FCC, where he puts Tom Wheeler in there, whether it's the SEC, where he puts Mary Jo White in there, all from industry. He is joined at the hip with industry, and it's taken the American public, only those paying attention, to understand that he has absolutely, completely lied to the American people about who he is. And the Califf story tells it very clearly. This is a guy that helped fund two separate drug company startups, Tom. Califf says that collusion between the industry and the government is the wave of the future. Think about that. His statement that collusion between the industry and government is the wave of the future. Why in the hell should we even have a regulatory entity if that's the way this guy thinks?
You're really speaking to a much larger problem, are you not, Mike? The revolving door, the money in politics, the politicians, apparently including President Obama, who kowtow to you know, wealth and power, basically, in this case, the pharmaceutical industry, rather than concerning themselves with the business of the people.
Well, it is true, but here we're talking about human life at stake. The SEC issues with Wall Street, people may lose their entire life savings, as we've seen so many times before. But in this situation, look, the FDA already relies on testing performed and funded by drug companies for 60% of their approvals. This means that the agency is already letting Big Pharma police itself, and that's exactly what Califf wants to do more of. When you put a Califf in office, what ends up happening is you kill people. And this is a guy who has shown that he is willing, that he thinks there's an acceptable risk to kill people. And the argument being, well, we want the research to be more robust. The pharmaceutical industry owns Obama. And I don't say that lightly, Tom. They own him. They own him where it comes to charging ridiculous amounts. This is a president who had the ability to say, if the government can get involved in making sure that the pharmaceutical industry doesn't charge too much. He chose not to. Specifically said, I will not do that. He did it. A lot of different reasons. Hillary's getting ready to run. She's getting huge money from the pharmaceutical industry. He doesn't want to upset that apple cart. But if you really think about what's at stake here, this is not just the SEC. This isn't just FCC. This is people where you have 100,000 people that are going to die this year from taking prescription drugs as directed. That doesn't even include the numbers of people who overdose or mix medications. That's the number of people who die every single year from drug side effects. Why is it happening more than ever now? Because the FDA is dysfunctional, and because you have presidents like President Obama who really believes that it's more important to take care of Wall Street and big oil and big pharma, more important to do that than it is to take care of consumers out there that are counting on people like Califf to do the right thing. This man will not do the right thing. He's nothing more than a pharmaceutical hack. This president knows it, just like this president understood that Eric Holder, when he was appointed to the Justice Department, to head up the Justice Department, he knew that Eric Holder was a hack. So there's a pattern here, and the pattern has not changed in the last since Obama took office.
Yeah, it seems Mary Jo White at the FEC or the SEC, yes. Also. I mean, yeah, this is a, so. Is there an alternative to Califf that anybody is pushing? Or
okay, that was Mike Papantomio, who is the partner of RFK Jr., who meets the pharmaceutical industry in court to challenge him on behalf of the American public. So now you know that FDA's commissioner-to-be, it should be challenged, it should be fought. Contact your legislator, contact the White House and say no to this potential FDA commissioner, because it'll be 100% a big pharma all the way on everything. Now, let's before we go over to my guest who's standing by, Gerald Celante, just also let me mention that we're trying to help our sister station, WBAI, to maintain some solvency and programming. I'll be working in the next hour helping them raise funds. But there's been a problem of people not receiving their premiums. And what I'm doing is I'm collecting a list from anyone who has not received your premium or premiums so I can try to get you your premium. So call 646-926-5422. Give the information. How many premiums did you not receive? When did you order them? How did you pay for them? What were they? So we can take all that in at one time, try to get your premiums. Now, let's say hello to Gerald Celante. I gave Gerald's background a little earlier. He is he publishes the trendsjournal.com, that's his website. And nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Well, thank you for having me on, Gary. Gerald, that was a great interview, by the way. Just a quick comment on it. You know, this is not a revolving door. It's one door. And the names of the people, some of them were mentioned. It's a takeover. The corporations are running the government. And it's not capitalism, it's fascism. It's called the merger of state and corporate powers. And that interview really summed it up very tightly, I believe.
Good. I want to go through eight issues very quickly. This audience is sophisticated enough to know what the point is if you say yes or no without going into a lot of detail, because I want to hit several issues at once, all right?
Sure.
Tell us what you think is going to be happening since we're currently in multiple bubbles. We have an equity bubble in Wall Street. We have the different corporate loans out there that's over $26 trillion. We have unfunded or underfunded entitlements, including pensions. We have an enormous amount of debt in the personal market, including car loans, home loans, mortgages, and student loans and credit card debt. And then we have federal loans, debt that's out there. So taken in total, the most conservative figure I can come up with is over $47 trillion. That's the most conservative. The most more realistic is about $116 trillion. What do you see happening to our economies over the next year or two?
Well, it's global, and the numbers that you said, you can magnify that around the world. So the biggest equity bubble and debt bubble in world history has been created by artificially low interest rates and programs called quantitative easing. For example, you look at the debt level of China. It's gone from $500 billion in 1995 to almost $30 trillion today. So you take the United States with the debt levels that you just mentioned. You take the ones in Europe. You take it in Japan with their Abenomics. All this has done is created a big bubble. But what's going on is that you could just see it in the last week. All the central banks are working together. So, for example, one day you have the European Central Bank say, we're going to do another round of quantitative easing. We're going to buy up more bonds if this doesn't work. The next day, the Bank of China comes out and says, we're lowering interest rates. Then they come out and they say, we're going to lower the reserve ratio requirements for banks. And one bank, central bank after another, coming out saying they're going to do more to stimulate their economies. When will the bubble burst? I believe it's going to burst before the end of this year. Could I be wrong? Of course I can, because they keep coming up with dreams, schemes undreamed of.
Okay. This is now I'm going to hit several issues and in quick succession. Why is the IRS spying on American phone calls from Derek Braz, anti-media, quote, following the first ever congressional hearing on Stingray cell phone surveillance, new details revealed the Secret Service and the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, are also using the controversial spy devices. At a congressional hearing last week, officials with the Department of Justice and Department of Homeland Security released new details about the federal government's use of Stingray cell phone surveillance Stingrays, also known as cell site simulators, constitute another example of military tools finding their way into the hands of federal agencies and local police departments across the United States. And so now, everywhere in America, they have these towers. They could have them on, let's say, a traffic light. But what they're doing is they're, when you're anywhere in that area, they can listen in and capture, record your phone conversations.
It's what I said when I commented on Mr. Papantonio's comments. It's fascism. This is what you can expect from a fascist country. And the multinationals, the corporations have taken over, and they don't want any interference in any way. And they will go after those people that try to go, to try to expose them and turn it around. So it's just at every level, our Constitution and our Bill of Rights have been abrogated. And
okay, good. This is from Justin Gardner from Free Thought Project, quote, civil asset forfeiture, which I've talked a lot about on this program, which, by the way, this past year was $4 billion. Now, mind you, for people not familiar with it, let's say you're driving through Alabama and someone likes your car, a cop likes your car. They pull over, they say, get out of the car, and they say, we're confiscating this car. You say, why? It's my car. I have a title to it. Well, no, we believe that you got this car because of illegal drug proceeds. Well, that's ridiculous. I'm a preacher. Doesn't matter what you are, we're taking your car. They took over 10,000 cars, over 100 businesses, $4 billion. Now, mind you, not one of those people were actually charged with anything. They were told just to go on their way. You could go to court if you could find where in the system to file a complaint, but the probability was that you would lose. Here's the latest on this. Talk about innovative. Quote, civil asset forfeiture is coming under increased criticism around the country as the immoral in nature of this drug war weapon becomes exposed. New Mexico became the first state to make meaningful reforms, and even law enforcement officers are speaking out against it. Civil asset forfeiture amounts to outright theft from innocent people, since cash and assets can be taken with no conviction of a crime. It brings billions in revenue to police departments collectively, so they can turn around and get whatever gadgets they want. Now they have something new. Get this. It's called the Electronic Recovery and Access to Data Prepaid Card Reader. This tool, developed by the Department of Homeland Security, is increasingly being deployed by local police departments. This allows cops to swipe prepaid cards, check the balance, freeze your account, take all of your money. Whoa. So now all the, they can take your money and they get away with it. So I want to tell people, you travel now with anything that can be confiscated, you put yourself at risk of being having that taken, but now they can actually take what's in your account. Your thoughts on this?
Well, again, it's a neo-feudal society. We have different rules and different regulations for we the people, and the big criminals, again, going back to what Papantonio was just saying about Eric Holder and Mary Jo White, and nobody getting convicted for the high crimes and misdemeanors they've been committing on Wall Street. Not one of the white shoe boys' heads rolled. But don't you break the law, because there's different laws for the economic elite and the political nobility. They could start wars, kill people based on lies. Nobody goes to jail, no trials, no nothing. You're convicted of felonies. Six banks convicted of felonies. Not one head rolled. But you can't do anything wrong at the lower level. And again, it goes back to this is what you can expect in a fascist society, the merger of state and corporate powers.
This is something completely different from Zero Hedge. Quote, majority of U.S. college students now support regulating free speech. Yeah, this is a concept in the news and a criterion. 51%, or the majority of college students, favor speech codes, meaning regulated words. So if you, and hence you must be politically correct in everything, and they gave an example of Williams College, where, by the way, the tuition is $63,290 per year, and they call it uncomfortable learning, a speaker series. And it was supposed to promote intellectual diversity, but they didn't like what one of the speakers had said before in a book, so they simply disinvited him because they didn't meet this, and they told that the students might be angry, and they actually have counseling for students who might be upset by something that someone says on campus, or even professors now have to be very cautious that there's a hostility now being ingrained in free speech and hence in free thought in academia. So I know this current generation is the dumbest on history, and I can't tell you the contempt I have for those who would censor free speech, but now the majority of college students don't want you having free speech. They don't want to be offended. Your thoughts?
Well, they lack courage, and you can see it at every level. There's no major movements going on protesting all the things that we were just talking about. And so this is a way for them to back out of taking any action by blaming it on not being politically correct. And by the way, even that term, politically correct, is an oxymoron, because there's nothing correct about anything political. So all it is, it's a way of dissuading people from taking action by criticizing them for what they say and how they say it.
Also, I read a very good post by Rabbi Michael Lerner, who I have a lot of respect for. It was called Netanyahu, You Have No Shame. And, quote, Israel's prime minister attributing the Holocaust to Palestinian influence over Hitler is a blood libel level lie. And then he goes on to say, in the Middle Ages, some Christians claimed that Jews were kidnapping Christian children and using their blood to make Passover mitzvah. Which is, in Jewish law, would make the Jewish kidnapper a murderer and deserving the death penalty, and make everything else unkosher. He goes on to talk about it was a blood libel. But what he's saying here is that this is all about a Zionist philosophy, not a Jewish philosophy. There are gazillion rabbis who are Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, who are opposed to Zionism. But he's, in effect, he's saying, how come that anyone else in the world, Were there laws, serious laws, about denying the Holocaust or making a blood libel? How come they're held to one standard and Netanyahu is held to a different standard? And he really took issue with it, but in his own very scholarly and humanistic way. Your thoughts on what Netanyahu was able to get away with, and how the American press and how the American political establishment didn't say boo to him?
Well, AIPAC, you know, controls the political system. You see the pressure that they give them, and you hear every one of the presidential candidates that we have to support Israel. And as I see it, by the way, when you mentioned Zionism, and it was created, what, by Theodor Herzl in the late 1800s. It was in Pest, which is now Budapest, and there was a whole colonization going on in those days from Europe, you know, taking over pieces of the Middle East, Africa, and on and on. And that's all this is. It's a colonization. So when anybody says, when you criticize people like Netanyahu or others and call you an anti-Semite, they have it backwards, because these are Eastern Europeans. They're Ashkenazi, from Ben-Gurion to Golda Meir, from Sharon all the way through to Netanyahu, Begin. They're all Eastern European Ashkenazi Jews. They didn't convert to Judaism until around 800, 900 A.D. So they are the anti-Semites, because they're going into a Semitic land and killing the inhabitants or putting them into an apartheid state. So they have it backwards. It's the Ashkenazis and the Netanyahus that are the anti-Semites.
Okay, finally here, goodbye middle class. 51% of all American workers make less than $30,000 a year. This is Michael Snyder, the Sleuth Journal, quote, we just got more evidence that the middle class in America is dying. According to brand new numbers that were just released by the Social Security Administration, 51% of all workers in the United States make less than $30,000 a year. Let that number sink in for a moment. You can't support a middle-class family in America today on just $2,500 a month, especially after taxes are taken out. And yet more than half of all workers in this country make less than that each month. In order to have a thriving middle class, you have got to have an economy that produces lots of middle-class jobs, and that simply is not happening in America today. And then it says 38% of American workers make less than $20,000 a year. And 71% of all American workers make less than $50,000 a year. The first number is truly staggering. The federal poverty level for a family of five is $28,410, and yet almost 40% of all American workers do not even bring in $20,000 a year. So, and yet we're told by those talking heads on all of the television networks, especially, you know, the fascists over at MSNBC, that the economy's going great. Just look at the numbers. Look at the profit. And I'm thinking, they haven't been out there then to see the truth that those of us who are actually going into communities see. Your thoughts, please.
It goes back to the question about what's going on with the economy and how we have zero interest rate policy, which hurts everybody that's not playing the market because they can't save their money, because all it did was to make the rich richer by the mergers and acquisition activity that now is the greatest in the history of the country, bigger than 2007. And it also, the stock companies buying back their stock because they're borrowing money for nothing. So go back to a Credit Suisse study that just came out, and it says that only Kazakhstan, Libya, Russia, and Ukraine have worse wealth inequality than the United States. These are for countries with over a million people. So we now have a gap between rich and poor that is worse than it was during the Gilded Age. So the money's not concentrated on the 1%, it's the 0.01%. You have 400 people in the United States that have $2.5 trillion. So that's why, going back to the number that you just talked about of the inequality of 51% of all workers in the United States make less than $30,000 a year, is because the filthy rich are getting filthy richer because of the policies by the central banks and the government.
One last follow-up question. This is concerning a lot of people. I believe that the reason that you're seeing a dog and pony show with the Benghazi hearings is because no one in government is going to tell the truth about why Benghazi, the real story of Benghazi has not been told, because Benghazi's annex, which was CIA run, was shipping arms, which would have been illegal, into Syria. And those arms were going into the hands of, there is no such thing as a moderate terrorist. They were going into hands of people that ended up getting them to al-Nusra Front, which are rabid terrorists, and al-Qaeda, rabid terrorists, and ISIS. And ISIL at that time, rabid terrorists. And this is a sovereign nation, and we had not declared a war. So if the truth be known, that the reason all this had to be kept secret, they're focusing on the wrong end. They're focusing on, why didn't you get someone in there to protect or rescue these people, instead of, what were all these people doing there to begin with? Your thoughts on that?
Well, again, go back to before that. I mean, why did the United States overthrow the sovereign nation of Libya? I mean, Gaddafi, you know, like him or hate him, you know, wasn't our business, and it was the richest country in Africa. And now it's totally destroyed and destabilized. And here's the quote from the who we believe, is, if the elections were held now, will be the next president. Quote, "It's time for Gaddafi to go, now, without further violence or delay. We want him to leave. We want him to end his regime." Hillary Clinton, back in 2011. So who is this we that they keep talking about? Maybe she's talking about I and the other psychopaths that she hangs around with. So that's the real issue, that why was this country overthrown? Why were they destabilized? And this is just what you were talking about, more of the military-industrial complex and the psychopaths, you know, squeezing the next dime out of the next war.
Gerald Salante, by the way, as always, Gerald, thank you for coming on. And something new, Gerald will begin tomorrow on the Progressive Radio Network to have his own hour program each week. What time is that, Gerald?
I'm not sure.
All right.
I don't have it in front of me. I think it's around 4. I'm not sure.
It is at Well, I'll get the engineer to tell me in a second.
Okay.
So I thank you very much. And
I'm looking forward to being on Progressive Radio. And
what time is it? I'm going to ask my engineer to actually come in the studio and tell me. So I get come in the studio right now, please, so I know. But Gerald's show is going to be very popular. That I can tell you, because Gerald's in touch with all the heavyweights in the world out there. What time is Gerald coming on the show tomorrow?
11.
Gerald, we just got the word from Jason, program director.
11, all right.
11 o'clock, Progressive Radio Network. We look forward to it, Gerald.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on.
Good, thank you. So stand up, stretch for a moment. We'll be right back with you.